It's 10:06. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today. Kathleen will be back tomorrow. Yesterday, the Cuban National Assembly met to elect a new president as well as other government officials. And for the first time since 1959, Fidel Castro's name was not on the ballot. Instead, his brother, 76-year-old Raul, will be the next Cuban president, a post he has held as acting president since his brother's hospitalization in 2006. We're going to talk about Cuba today, Cuba's future, Cuba's new leadership, what it's like, what it means for Cuban-American relations, and anything else you want to talk about related to Cuba. Here are your phone numbers. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. 227-2050 is the number to use if you're calling us from Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. And you can start calling now. Take calls as soon as we fill up the phone bank here. Joining us to talk about what this means for Cuba and Cuban-American relations is Sylvia Wilhelm, founder and executive director of Cuban Bridges, an organization that advocates cultural exchanges between the people of Cuba and the United States. She is an advocate for changing U.S. policy towards Cuba, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast.
Good morning from sunny Miami.
Sunny Miami. Don't rub it in. we talk about the weather here as the price we pay to live in paradise.
I'm sure you do. I understand it's a wonderful place to live. I have friends there.
Okay, well, there's always a little tongue-in-cheek included in that. So we had Raul Castro elected as the next president of Cuba. What do we know about Raul Castro other than the fact that he's 76 and he's Fidel Castro's brother?
Well, you know, Raul Castro for a lot of people continues to be an enigma, but more and more we read about his life and his personality. Everything seems to indicate that Raul Castro is a much more of a pragmatist than his brother. He likes things done and done well. He stays on top of things. He is a family man. He is a man that is known to have a very good sense of humor. Much more relaxed than his brother. He certainly lacks the charisma that his brother has. He obviously is totally loyal to the work of his brother and the Cuban Revolution. And we're just going to have to patiently see what happens in the next few months under his leadership.
The as I was doing some reading about Raul and about the entire situation in Cuba with this kind of change in at least in names at the top, originally it was thought that Raul Castro was more of a communist than Fidel Castro was. That Fidel started out as more of a nationalist. Raul picked up became acquainted with and involved with communism in during his college days. Is that pretty accurate?
That seems to be the case, yes. I believe Raul took up communism before Fidel proclaimed that he was also a communist. I think this is something that has been part of Raul's life since his youth and continues to be part of his life. I think he feels very strongly about the socialist way of life and communism if there's much left in the world anymore.
Now, there had been quite a bit of speculation, as there is any time we're anticipating a change of government anywhere in the world, there's always speculation about what it means. But there had been some speculation that some of the next generation of leaders in Cuba would be elevated to key posts in the Cuban government. This did not happen. Why do you suppose that was?
You know, this was a surprise because the pundits and the analysts were almost sure that Raul was going to share, in some ways, the leadership with a much younger generation, which really, when you look at the assembly, how the assembly is composed now, the majority of them are under 50 years old. We're talking about a very young group of leaders that are becoming, you know, very, very much part of the running of the government. It was a surprise. I will tell you that I was very surprised also about the choice of first vice president, a man who is only a year younger than Raul Machado Ventura, who is from the allegedly more orthodox line of the Cuban Communist Party, meaning a man who is not seen as a, quote, reformer by people in Cuba and outside of Cuba. He did keep Mr. Laje in the Council of State, as he was before. And, of course, like I said before, the assembly is composed mainly of young people. Why he did this, I have not come to a clear analysis. Maybe I never will. It could very well be, and this is obviously total speculation, who are we to know, but it could be that Raul is himself the reformer, and maybe he is sending a message that there needs to be unity. You need to support my leadership, because if you don't support my leadership, what is going to substitute me is very possibly a harder line than I possibly can be. And I am going to try to think along those ways. I am going to listen very carefully to the fact that Raul Castro said yesterday that there will be changes in Cuba. Now the question is to wait and see what they are. But as what he did yesterday is, even though he went towards a more conservative branch of the government to substitute him, a more orthodox branch of the government, he also sent a signal immediately to the population saying, but there will be changes. There will be changes, and I am the one in charge. That's how I'm going to look at it right now. After saying that, I also, and it's too early to tell because this just happened yesterday, but I don't know what the reaction from the youth in Cuba is, from the students at the university. I think I would venture to say that they are today disappointed, I would say. But it's too early to tell.
Raul Castro has been the de facto president of Cuba since 2006, when Fidel Castro was hospitalized. And he has given out some hints that, yes, we're going to make some changes. And he indicated yesterday, I believe, that the bureaucracy in Cuba needed to be streamlined, and perhaps there needed to be some more local autonomy and some things like that. There is some speculation that Cuba would try to remodel its economy to look more like the economies of North Vietnam and China, a couple of countries which also have communist governments but have embraced private enterprise to a certain degree. And again, we're speculating here, but I guess that's what makes radio programs is speculation. If we didn't have it, I don't know. I think we'd have trouble filling the day.
That's right.
But he didn't give out any real specifics as to what's going to happen. And I guess this is one of my long-winded questions that I'm famous for. How much authority will Raul Castro have in terms of being able to create change within the system that exists in Cuba right now?
Well, I would say that he would have, as of today, much more authority than he had prior to today. Because as of today, he was formally elected by the National Assembly of Cuba. That in itself was a major step to get him legitimized in the government of Cuba. He also sent a very important message, and that was something that the delegates at the Assembly also applauded standing up, if I remember correctly, was the fact that he asked their permission to consult his brother in matters of national security. In other words, you know, Fidel is still around. He is the leader of this revolution. We have enormous respect for him. And I want to make sure that you understand that even though I am now your new president-elect, you have elected me, I will still, with your permission, consult with my brothers. So Fidel is not out of the picture. He will be out of the picture in terms of the running of the government, but in terms of some serious consultations from the new president in terms of national security, he will continue to play a role. I think in terms of whether they're copying other models, it might, a lot of people were counting on that as being a sure thing. I never thought it was a sure thing. I always think everything with Cuba is much more cautious and much slower than we see in other places. I think it will come, but it will be a slower process. I think what Raul Castro is going to probably do right now is tend to the immediate needs of the Cuban people in terms of economics. They have a two-currency system, which is extremely convoluted and difficult for Cubans to live with. On the one hand, you have the peso, which truly has very little value, when you have another currency, which is the convertible peso, which is 25 to 1 peso. It's really, really difficult for Cubans with the kind of salaries they make to be able to buy things that require a convertible peso to make ends meet. So they resort to going to the black market. They resort to stealing in many cases. And they are very, very aware of this in Cuba. I would say that's probably going to be the first thing that the new government is going to look at very, very seriously. How do we handle the double currency? How do we handle the fact that the salaries that the Cubans have right now certainly do not allow them to live a normal life? And then from then, I think they will maybe tackle the issue of the desire in the part of the Cuban people to have the right to travel. And by that, I don't mean that they simply can travel, because you can have the right to travel, but it also requires that you have the money to travel, and it also requires that the countries that you're going to visit give you a visa to travel. But at least I think the Cubans feel very strongly that they do not want to ask permission, meaning a white card that the government has to issue before you travel abroad. And maybe that's something that they will also deal with right now. These are things that come to mind that I think are on the table, and I think they'll start looking at it, maybe at a slower pace than we all wanted it to be.
Fidel Castro stepped down as president, but he is still the leader of the Communist Party, and isn't that where the real power is in Cuba?
No question about it, that the Communist Party is what provides the leadership and keeps the ideology in place. Yes, he's still the leader of the Communist Party, and maybe there will be a meeting of the Communist Party this year. They haven't had it for years. I would dare say that they will have a meeting sometime later on this year.
We're going to go to the phones in just a moment. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we have some people who are waiting to ask some questions or make a comment. And there's still a line open for you if you'd like to come on the air with us. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, please call us at 414-227-2050, 800-486-8655, 227-2050. Our guest this hour, Sylvia Wilhelm, founder and executive director of Cuban Bridges, who joins us by phone from sunny Miami. We'll get to your calls from snowy Wisconsin and elsewhere after this. I'm John Munson, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 21 minutes past 10 o'clock, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up a little bit later on Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network. Ever wonder what air travel is like in India and Africa? After 3 on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, we'll get the skinny from Ask the Pilot columnist Patrick Smith and international airline safety expert William Voss. That's coming up on Here on Earth, 3 o'clock this afternoon. Cuba without Fidel is what we're talking about this hour with Sylvia Wilhelm, founder and executive director of Cuban Bridges, an organization that advocates cultural exchanges between the people of Cuba and the United States. She is an advocate for changing U.S. policy towards Cuba and joins us by phone, and you can too. And to prove it, we're going to go to the phones right now and talk to Carly in Racine. Carly, good morning.
Hi, for taking my call. My I guess my concern with the state of Cuba as it is now, and looking back at our past relationships with Cuba, Cuban Missile Crisis, the Bay of Pigs, et cetera, and not only that, but also the United States' political relations internationally with other dictatorships, my concern is now that we will see this as a possible weakness, a possible opportunity to jump back into Cuba and reclaim it and reassert our power there. So I guess that would be my comment. My question, though, would be if this also opens up the opportunity of opening the trade sanctions that we have on Cuba, and if you see any change in that developing in the future. And I can take my question off air, too.
Thanks for the call, Carly.
Well, hi, Carly. To go back to your first concern, I don't think the United States is in the slightest interested in doing any kind of intervention in Cuba. And certainly not in the middle of a presidential election or anything like that. I don't think that's in the cards. As to the second possibility, I don't see trade sanctions being lifted also in a presidential year, but I do think we have to remain firm as Americans in reclaiming rights that have been taken away from us. For example, in the case of Cuban Americans, I am a Cuban American, this administration has severely restricted our right to travel, to go to Cuba and see our families and help our families, which is done by immigrants all over the universe. I mean, this is one of the reasons a lot of people emigrate, is to be able to help those who stay behind. And that's something that we are going to work very, very hard this year, as we have for the last 4 years, obviously without success with this administration, is the fact that our rights as Americans are being taken away by our government. And I also think this is a moment, once again, where Americans need to understand that their rights to travel to Cuba have been curtailed by our policy. And you know, regardless of what's happening in Cuba, our government should not take away our basic rights. And one of them is to travel. So if we could just take focus on demanding a right to travel, I think other things will fall into place.
Thanks for the call, Carly. Let's go next to Robert in Madison. Robert, good morning.
Good morning. Wanted the guest, Sylvia, to give me her best guesstimate of this, the profile of the Cuban people, and specifically the age group of 30 to 50, which I think represent, you know, the adults of the country. I'm just going to speculate. Are they 33% communists, 33% socialists, and 33% closet capitalists? Obviously, I'm thinking Sylvia will adjust those percentages. Take my answer off the air.
You know what? I am not going to deal with percentages, but I will tell you the fact that 70%, and this is the only percent I'm going to use, of the people who live in Cuba right now were born after the revolution. That is a very important factor to consider here. These people, this is all they have known. This is all they have either believed in or not believed in. This is their reality check, that their entire lives, and we're going 50 years now, this is all they have known. So I would say there is discontent in the economic arena in Cuba, severe discontent. People want a change to a system that will be more in tune with the severity of their daily life. And we're hoping that the new leaders of Cuba that were just elected yesterday will be listening to the desires of the Cuban people. In terms of politics, I think the majority of the people who are in Cuba right now, as long as you start fixing the economics, they would rather work with people that they have known for all these years, because that's all they've known. And they're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. As long as they are listening to their concerns about the severity of their economic situation And may I add also, by the way, that that the embargo does play a role in making a very difficult situation worse, but the embargo is not the number one cause of the severity of the lives of the Cuban people. But it adds tremendously to that severity. I want to make sure you understand where I'm coming from.
Now, the United States has a trade embargo with Cuba. Do other countries have a similar embargo?
The United States is the only country in the world that has an embargo with Cuba. And as a matter of fact, every time there is a vote in the United Nations on the Cuba embargo, the immense majority of the countries of the world, with the exception of Guam, Israel, which, by the way, does have business in Cuba, the United States, and I think the Marshall Islands or Palau, in other words, two protectorates of the United States and Israel and the United States are the only four countries in the world that vote to keep the status quo. The embargo has absolutely no support, none whatsoever, internationally. It is a failed policy that needs to change.
Let's take a call next from Steve in Houston, Texas. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, this is a great show. And, you know, your guest has made some great points. And I guess, you know, the thing I'm concerned about is, you know, how can we help the Cuban people? And it sounds like the embargo hasn't worked. But I just want to make a case as somebody who worked with a freedom organization that helped people escaping communist countries, including Cuba, you know, former Nicaragua, Eastern Europe, and in Asia, Vietnam, many in China, and the Soviet Union, is that the American press is really responsible in many ways, Hollywood, of glamorizing Fidel Castro as some kind of a hero, you know, big parades, everybody comes out and cheers for him. He's a great patriot. But I have friends that just came back. He's from Mexico. He's a missionary. He spent a couple weeks in Cuba, and he reported back very honestly. He took pictures that Cuba is still in the throes of classical Marxism. It always has been, where people live in a state of almost on the verge of starvation. Food is rationed. They own nothing. They have nothing. They have government spying on them. People, and the proof of that is that, look at Elian Gonzalez. People don't leave, and I'm sure your guests will testify that people don't leave on rafts in shark-infested waters as they have in Cuba, in Vietnam, you know, unless they're, you know, on the verge of, unless they're imprisoned by their country. And that's what is happening in Cuba. We need to acknowledge that communism is bankrupt. It's bankrupt in Venezuela. It's bankrupt everywhere it's been practiced. And we need to list Castro and his legacy as being nothing less than barbarism and genocide, and then seek how to help Cuba.
Well, I will tell you the truth. If you were to propose what you just said to the majority of the people who live in Cuba right now, I think you would find some great opposition to your proposal and your analysis. There is no question in my mind that the Cubans are going through a very difficult economic situation because the system itself simply does not work. Centralized economy has been shown to be not an efficient system. But having said that, there have been some changes that have come about in Cuba since 1959, and a lot of the people in Cuba take their hats off to those systems. And the fact that they have universal health care, the fact that they have universal education, the fact that there is some concern for social justice is something that has come under this government, and it's something that Cubans applaud. Having said that, how can we Americans help the Cuban people? I think not only can we help the Cuban people, but the Cuban people can help us by engagement. People-to-people work, professional exchanges, cultural exchanges, tear down the wall that separates the people of both countries. Let's not even talk about the governments. Let's talk about the rights of people to meet each other, to nourish each other, to learn from each other. And you will see some radical changes taking place, not only in Cuba, but in the way we look at Cuba and its reality. That's where I put my money. I put my money on serious people-to-people work if we want to once again become friends of one of our neighbors, i.e. Cuba.
The caller brought up Venezuela, and President Chavez of Venezuela was very quick to congratulate Raul Castro on his ascendancy to the presidency of Cuba and pledge his support. How do other Latin American countries view Cuba? I know, just to kind of preface that, it was. In the 60s and into the 70s and until really the fall of the Soviet Union, the United States perceived Cuba as some sort of security threat in the region. But how do the USSR is no more? Cuba doesn't really have any huge allies in terms of anyone else who shares their ideological view, or at least of the leadership. How does the rest of Latin America view Cuba today?
Well, first of all, Cuba is not a security risk to the United States of America, and it's not said by me. It's said by American generals. It's said by the CIA. It's said by the international community. Cuba is no longer a threat to the security of this country. Right now, I would say that Cuba has a better standing in terms of relations to Latin America than it has had in years. When you look at the new agreements that they just signed with Lula da Silva in Brazil, obviously the relationship, the very close relationship they have with Venezuela, which, by the way, is a two-way street. Not only does Venezuela provide the oil to Cuba at a very subsidized rate, which Cubans need desperately, but Cubans have sent hundreds, probably thousands of medical doctors to Venezuela to treat patients in the jungles of Venezuela, where no Venezuelan doctor would even care to wander. They have sent brigades of Cuban teachers to alphabetize all the people in Venezuela who cannot read and write, and they are and they live in a very rich country, and yet they were forgotten by a long list of presidents prior to Mr. Chavez. You have Bolivia with Evo Morales supporting Cuba. You have Ecuador with Correa supporting Cuba. You have more moderate socialists like Bachelet from Chile supporting Cuba. You have Kirchner supporting Cuba. In other words, even the Uribe, the president of Colombia, who is a staunch ally of the United States, have had to deal with Cuba and all this release of hostages, et cetera. And in Latin America right now, I would say Cuba has not looked better in terms of relations. So that's something that we need to remember when we analyze all this, that Cuba is not being isolated by Latin America. On the contrary, Cuba is being embraced by Latin America. Mexico, very important to mention Mexico, even with Calderón, who is a moderate, almost right of center, very close to the United States, and yet he has made an intense commitment to not only continue his relations with Cuba, but to make him even better. So Latin America is sending, I think, a very clear message that Cuba, with all its possible problems and black spots, if you want to call it that way, needs to be embraced as an active member of this Western Hemisphere. And we need to remember that.
We'll go back to the phones and take a call next from David in Sussex. David, good morning.
Good morning. I just would like to make one aside. First of all, the comment before by your guest that stated that central governments are very inefficient and bankrupt, thank you very much for that admission. Could someone please tell Barack Obama? Now, the next, what I really wanted to talk about, though, was you have a situation in Cuba where the place is collapsed. As far as it goes, there is no education there of what the rest of the world is doing. Obviously, Castro wanted to keep these people in the dark for quite some time. And when you have education that tells you exactly what the country wants you to know, when you have any kind of, news organizations that are completely owned by the government and only tell people what they want them to know, and when you have an entertainment system which, you know, censors everything that they don't want you to know, well, you're pretty much kept in the dark, which is lack of freedom, which is lack of understanding of what's going on out in the world. And these poor people are completely captured by this country. Now, the political systems that you're trying to end around, it sounds like, is one, our country's policy, which, quite frankly, I don't go for that at all. Now, you can try and change the policy here if you want by, you know, voting for whoever you like. But the point is while that policy is in place, to end around is called treason. You're working with our enemies. And quite frankly, the country of Cuba, the political organization, is our enemy right now because they don't have freedom for their people. And to say that, you know, their health system works better, blah, 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 well, that's a bunch of baloney. As far as I'm concerned, I've got plenty of health issues, and if I was broke, I'd still be able to get treatment for them. It's not like we have some kind of, you know, centralized policy here for health care. And quite frankly, I do not want to get my health care from the government and stand in line like I have to at the Department of Transportation for my licenses. That's the last thing I want to do, is have that kind of an inefficient service for my health care.
You have thrown – have you been to Cuba? Can I ask you, have you been to Cuba?
You're trying to do an end around and get the people to the people. That's
have
all
you
very
been to
well
Cuba,
good,
sir?
But the problem is you're bypassing our government's policies. And that
hang on,
is
David.
Wrong.
Hang on, David. Our guest has a question for you.
Sure.
Have you traveled to Cuba?
No, I have not. I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
And not
all
right now,
okay.
Anyway.
Okay, fine. And you have every right not to travel, by the way. And I respect your decision. You've thrown a lot to me, so I'm going to try to remember some of the things that you've thrown at me. And let me start by saying that if we look at governments in the world that, according to our democracy and our values, do not treat their citizens the way we think they should be treated, I would say that our diplomatic relations would be severely curtailed. Because I'm going to start with Saudi Arabia, and I'm going to say that I, as a woman, consider severe violations of human rights happening in that country, who is, oh, and not to mention elections, by the way, or the lack of elections in that country, the lack of democracy in that country, and yet they are one of our staunchest allies. So let's be real and let's be sincere about the fact that our foreign policy is hypocritical at best. That litmus test of we should only have relations with countries that have all these different criteria that we accept is false, completely false, because we don't follow that. So let me start by putting that aside. Let me start by saying that in Cuba, Cubans are, believe it or not, in spite of the limitations that they have, to have access to the press, the international press, to have access to internet, which, by the way, more and more people in Cuba have internet right now, they are extremely well informed. They're extremely well informed. I will tell you, because I go to Cuba on a regular basis, I have taken many, many people to Cuba in humanitarian visits, and one of the things that amazes them the most is how informed the people in Cuba are. Maybe it's because Cubans are extremely resourceful people, and they find a way to get it. They have illegal antennas on their television. They see the programs in Miami TV that I don't watch. So Cubans are extremely resourceful. Don't forget that. And furthermore, if you really are worried that they're not getting enough information, then join my campaign to restore our rights to travel to Cuba, and we as ambassadors of our democracy can travel to Cuba and can talk people to people with the people of Cuba and make sure that they understand what they're missing, if they're missing anything. Let's go travel to Cuba. Let's engage with the Cuban people. Let's open the floodgates of travel, and you will see how things start changing for both sides of the Florida Straits.
800-486-8655, 227-2050 are the numbers to use. We have a line that just opened up for you, so you can call and join our program. And we do have some more callers who want to get in, and we'll get to them in just a moment. We're talking about Cuba in the wake of the National Assembly vote yesterday to install Raul Castro, the brother of Fidel Castro, as the next president of Cuba. He's been acting president since 2006, and now he has the title outright. And we're talking about what that means with our guest, Sylvia Wilhelm, founder and executive director of Cuban Bridges, an organization that advocates cultural exchanges between the people of Cuba and the United States. She is an advocate for changing U.S. policy towards Cuba. We'll be back with more of our discussion after this. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10:43. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. And weather permitting, Kathleen will be back on the air tomorrow. Here's what's coming up in the next hour here on the Ideas Network. After 11:45, Larry Mueller and the Weather Guys talk about this Wisconsin winter. They are UW-Madison meteorology professors Steve Ackerman and John Martin. How appropriate on a day when there's a winter weather warning for much of the state and watches and advisories all over the place that we have the Weather Guys on with Larry. That's coming up after 11:45 here on the Ideas Network. Cuba is on our minds this hour, and we're talking about, the reason we're talking about Cuba is that the National Assembly there held an election yesterday, and Raul Castro, the younger brother of Fidel Castro, was elected president. He has been serving as acting president since 2006 when Fidel Castro was hospitalized, and he's really not been able to much in public or he hasn't been seen very often since then. He has issued statements from time to time letting us know that he's still there and he still cares. Fidel Castro is still the head of the Communist Party in Cuba, so it's not like he's given up all of the power. But there is a new president and a new face on the Cuban government. Interestingly enough, yesterday, Mrs. Wilhelm, I noticed that the pictures that were shown of Raul Castro at the National Assembly, he was not wearing a military uniform. He had on a rather conservative suit with a sort of a gray tie, and the speech that he gave was not well. Fidel Castro was famous for delivering lectures that went on for hours. This speech yesterday lasted, I think, about a half an hour. Quite a contrast in terms of their personal style between Raul Castro and Fidel Castro.
No question about it. I think Raul Castro is a man of few words and a lot of action. And also, he was wearing a suit now that he is the president of the country and no longer the head of the armed forces. He passed on that title and responsibility someone else, to another of the, well-known generals in Cuba. So he's no longer the head of the armed forces of Cuba. He is now the president of Cuba.
Were there any other changes in terms of who's doing what that really matter in the Cuban government? I know that there were 31 different offices that were voted on yesterday. I think that was the number. The ballot for each one had one name on it because the people had been determined beforehand. But were there any other shifts in who was at the table as far as those positions were concerned?
Well, with the assembly, like I said before, you have a lot of younger representatives of the Cuban society, which I applaud. Within the Council of State, you have now, I believe, more generals. I think of the five members, in addition to Raul and the first vice president, you have three generals and two lay people. Obviously, these are Raul people. He is surrounding himself by his very, very personal, intimate, loyal friends or members of the government, probably very smart in his case to do that. And then we need to wait and be patient and see what the new composition of the Council of Ministers is, which has still not been appointed. And that is going to tell you a lot, and I would envision that there would be some changes there, but we have to wait.
Before I forget, and I intended to do this earlier, and one of our callers reminded me that I needed to do this, does your organization, Cuban Bridges, have a website that we can mention if people want to get more information about it?
No, we don't have a website at this point. As a matter of fact, we are redoing our website. So they'll have to wait. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, at some point, I think if you do a Google search on Cuban Bridges, you'll get some hits.
Exactly.
Let's go back to the phones and take a call from Doug in Eau Claire.
Good morning.
Doug, good morning.
I just had a comment and a question. I don't know if most people realize that Cuba has one of the largest intact rainforests in the Caribbean. And I know that U.S. developers would love to open Cuba for business developing every undeveloped sandy beach with high-rises. Is there any discussion in the Cuban community in Miami about the conservation measures that need to be in place before some of these pressures, these development pressures come in and want to take advantage of this open, you know, market for putting in resource and that kind of thing?
Well, I don't know how much discussion of that is in Miami. Unfortunately, a lot of people in Miami still are very much opposed to any type of opening, although the numbers seem to be smaller every time there's a poll. I know the University of Florida is doing some very serious research in that area, and I know that they, on the other side of the Florida Straits, the Cuban government is very concerned about it and also doing very, very serious studies and proposals for when it opens. And I'll put some quotations around that.
Thanks for the call, Doug. Let's go next to Al in Bayfield. Al, good morning.
Good morning. Question for your guest. I wondered if she might take a look at the current list of presidential candidates, including the new addition yesterday, Ralph Nader, and kind of assess which one might be the most helpful and productive in reaching some of the goals she would like to see in improving relationships between U.S. and Cuba.
Well, I would have to say that either one of the Democratic candidates, in my estimate, would have more of a rapprochement with Cuba than what we're hearing from McCain. I think Senator McCain is a strong proponent of keeping the status quo, and he is supported by some members of Congress from South Florida that are actually the architects of this policy. So I don't have much hope there if he were to be elected. I'm talking about vis-a-vis his policy towards Cuba. Although, you know, having said that, I also will tell you that if there are some specific changes in Cuba that the U.S. government looks positive at, Republicans have been, I have worked in Congress for many, many years, and Republicans have been actually just as good, if not better, than the Democrats in pushing for the opening of trade with Cuba, opening of travel with Cuba. So the Republicans in Congress, I will tell you that I can't just say the Democrats are the ones pushing for opening. Republicans are equally pushing for opening, if not more. But if I have to go for what I read in the papers and what I listen to them as they make their positions, their presidential positions known to the American public, obviously you would have a Barack Obama who is basically saying, yes, I would meet with the leaders of Cuba, provided that there's a certain agenda that makes sense, blah, blah, blah. But obviously he has already supported unconditional travel by Cuban Americans, and I'm pretty sure that he means it very, very seriously so. So I applaud that. And he has come supporting also the need for dialogue. And when it comes to Hillary Clinton, I think she is a very astute politician. And even though she says she kind of supports the status quo, she has always voted in Congress to open travel for all Americans. And I cannot imagine that if she were to be elected our president, she would have policies towards Cuba that would be very different from her husband's policies. And during the Clinton administration, we had the most travel by Americans to Cuba under a category basically called people-to-people. That's where Puentes Cubanos when we were created, because President Clinton believed very, very strongly that we needed to engage with Cuba, with the Cuban people, on a people-to-people basis, and then see where that led us in terms of the governments being able to have some kind of a dialogue. But then, unfortunately, the Brother to the Rescue's planes were shot down, as we all know, and he literally was forced to sign Helms-Burton, and then everything went backwards. So that's my analysis on the presidential candidates.
Al, thanks for that call. Let's go next to Derek in Round Lake, Illinois.
Yes, good Derek, afternoon.
Derek, good morning.
Actually, good morning. Very good program. I have visited Cuba twice back in the 80s when I used to live in Eastern Bloc countries, and during the 90s and when I lived in the U.S., one profound difference, I would say, is simply, yes, there are some issues as far as the human rights is concerned. Yes, the consumerism is not well developed. All the Cubans would be more than happy to take advantage of it. Yes, there are curtailments of the press, what have you. However, that said, as a journalist that traveled throughout, widely throughout South America, I find the situation in Cuba and Cuban people much better than any of our staunchest allies in the area itself. And I, one thing which has to be said about U.S. foreign policy is that we tend to make a very strong relationships and alliances with the elites of the countries, which tend to really not even care for the population itself, but while stashing away the money from the aid and enriching themselves, while even staunch opponents of the Castro regime can say that, you know, this guy definitely has certain ideological convictions. He doesn't get rich for himself. He really cares for more of the advancement of the nation. Whether he's going to succeed or not is another story, because the system that he has right now is a little bit anachronistic. And I find it's very surprising that the U.S. government, the lady that actually is a guest on your program, she should be really within the framework of the American foreign policy, advocating the citizen-to-citizen diplomacy, because this is the most effective way to share the peace, share the values, and also bring some type of enlightenment into the people who really want to, you know, get the fruits of democracy, versus having this really outdated and really, really counterproductive embargo, which really sits, you know, suits the local political interests in Florida and the Republican Party mostly. That's what I have to say.
Well, I will have to agree with most of the things you said. And I want to look at this from my perspective as an American citizen. I came to this country from Cuba 47 years ago, fleeing communism, and we need to move on with the program. The policy is a total failure. It is condemned by the international community. It is time that we reach out, like you said, people to people is the best diplomacy in the world, and I will tell you, in my years of doing people-to-people in Cuba, that that it creates a new reality. We are not going to change them completely, and they're not going to change us completely. What's going to happen is we're going to create a new reality and start from there. And it's a beautiful process to see, and it's something that we as Americans need to push to allow our government to let us do.
Let's take a call next from Art in Milwaukee. Art,
thanks,
good morning.
For the show. I'm with the Wisconsin Coalition to Normalize Relations with Cuba, Sylvia, so I'm very glad to hear you speak.
Well, good for you. Thank you.
And thank you for your work. Two things. One is, I just saw on Democracy Now! This morning, John McCain said, well, we can't normalize anything while Raul's around because he's associated with a government which in the past has supported terrorists throughout the world, and that's a claim that I think has been largely discredited, but the U.S. still lists Cuba as such a country. So, you know, in the Democratic debate, they said, well, we need to release political prisoners and have free elections and all that. But McCain is still using this whole terrorist thing. So any comment on that would be welcome. And secondly, any comment on the current situation regarding the right to travel? We're actually bringing in Lucius Walker from Pastors for Peace to Wisconsin on Thursday and Friday, who's used civil disobedience to try and challenge the U.S. restriction on our right to travel. But he's been subpoenaed in New York. There was a study group from Beacon School, that social studies group, went to Cuba, and there's a little witch hunt going on there even currently as to the right to travel and who organized it, et cetera. And this is our government, which is supposed to be the land of the free, discouraging people from being able to go to Cuba.
Art, we're just about out of time, and I want to make sure we give our guests a chance to respond to your comments.
Well, to go back to the terrorist situation, we live in a different world right now, and terrorism is a fact of life. After 9/11, we have to guard our security very carefully. So I'm glad that Mr. McCain is concerned about terrorism. But having said that, I will remind Mr. McCain, Senator McCain, that here in South Florida, we happen to be harboring a terrorist, somebody who blew a Cubana Airlines plane many, many years ago, over 20 years ago, killing 70-some people, including children and members of a fencing team. And even though he escaped from a prison in Venezuela and made it to the United States, how he made it in and how he still lives in Miami completely free, and our government is reluctant to return him for trial, where he needs to go to trial because he is a terrorist. I want to remind our government that if we are, like our president said, he who harbors a terrorist is a terrorist. We have to do some soul searching here and start by cleaning our house before we condemn other countries of doing terrorist act. I believe Ms. Senator McCain should look at this very seriously and take this person to justice.
We've got about 30 seconds. If you could assess for us what's likely to happen in the next 6 months to a year and do it very quickly, that would be nice to conclude with.
Well, I sincerely hope, and I feel a certain sense of optimism that Raul Castro, being the pragmatist that he is and being in tune with the concerns of the Cuban people, that he will start making some changes that will benefit the daily economic life of the Cuban people. I also hope that more the younger generations are more clearly represented in the Council of Ministers, so that the young people of Cuba have a sense of hope
and
that things are going to change.
And that's a great place to leave it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm John Munson, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.